you to look at in verse 3. This is the beginning of the whole book. And I want to go over kind of quickly the first two chapters this morning. And then we're going to dig into that in more detail on Wednesday night. What advantage does a man have in all of his work which he does under the sun? That's what he's trying to find out. Anybody know who the wealthiest person in the United States of America is?
Bill Gates.
So Bill Gates, when he shortly out of college, he and two friends invented Microsoft, and Microsoft made him a fabulously wealthy person. Do you know he's been retired? Bill Gates is younger than I am. He's already been retired about 10 to 11 years. So now he and Belinda, his wife, and Warren Buffett and others spend their time in the Bill and Linda Gates Foundation, which is to help people that are hungry around the world, to try to eradicate hunger. Why do you think he got tired of inventing things by the time he was 50 years old and spends all of his money now and all of his time as a humanitarian? What do you think causes that? Here's what I'm going to tell you, Solomon says. You can go and do and see and buy and laugh and play, and it will never touch the inner part of you. The part of you that's really important. God placed something inside of you that you will never quench. And what happens is you become frustrated when a person decides, I'm going to make this life be as fun-filled and full and enjoyable as possible. Eventually, you know what happens? You get frustrated. You get bored. You get depressed because it didn't meet my expectations. A year ago, last week actually, Linda and I were on the north shore of Kauai at a beautiful place called St. Regis, the Nepali coast. Beautiful, beautiful hotel, beautiful island. It rained every single day. All day long it rained. On top of that, I rented a red convertible. And at least 15 times, they pull it up here, I get in, I push the button, top comes down, looks all right. And we head out, and within 2 miles, we're wet. You know what we spent most of that week doing? We're drying our hair and complaining. Now, fortunately, we've been there before, and it was a better time. But what I would say to you is that's where Solomon found himself, and every one of us find ourselves that way. I want you to look in verse 13 with me for just a moment. Verse 13, this is what the book is about. If you were to look at one sentence that tells you what this book is about, what he was trying to find out, you see in verse 3. I set my mind to seek and explore wisdom concerning all that had been done under heaven. It is a grievous or an evil task which God has given the sons of men to be afflicted with. So what he tried to do in this book was his wisdom and his power and his money, just research and try to find out what is life all about. I want you to think about this with me for a moment. We like for life to be about what I'm going to call the novel things. I'm going to talk about that quite a bit. But the fact of the matter is, our life, the world that you live in today, is basically going to be defined by monotony. It's going to be defined by the sameness. And this is what Solomon determined. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. In the fourth verse, he says this. He says, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Look in the fifth verse. Also, the sun rises and the sun sets and hastens to its place. It rises again, blowing to the north and south, then turning to the south, then turning to the north. The wind continues swirling along on its circular course. The wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, they flow again. All is weariness, and man is not able to tell it. He's talking about now the monotony of life. Now, I want you to think about a few things. by way of introduction. I'm going to give you one example, and we'll have our prayer, and I want to dig into several more. A number of us were last Monday at a family plot, family cemetery, up near Navasota, Texas. This is where Jimmy Dale Harris is, and Wallace Harris, their family is there. And I thought, I was thinking on the way up there, I was riding with a number of the kids, and we got lost. And we got lost again, and we got lost again. Here's part of why that happens. A lot of you are smiling. You know where I'm going with this. So family cemeteries tend to be, you take the asphalt road to the little asphalt road, and you follow the little asphalt road until it becomes shale, and you keep going on the shale road till it becomes dirt, and you keep going on the dirt road till it becomes grass, and you'll be there. And most of the children my age had only been there a couple of times in their life. Now, Jimmy Dale's grandfather is buried there. Was buried there in 1901. And he's very proud of that. His mother and father. I was very proud to have known his mother, Susie. She's buried there. And his daddy's buried there. Hollis, his brother, was buried there. Sister Billy was just buried there. And in addition to that, something that I knew but forgot about was their first child died in childbirth and is also there. And they have two plots. And they're proud to tell you that we're going to be here. This is where we're going to be. Now, isn't it interesting for someone who's lived, say, 80 years, and you've got memory going back 70 years, that's a very important place, right? It's very important. But how much memory do their children have? 40 years, 45 years? Do they have the same memory? What about their children? So my family is buried in two plots up in East Texas, Zavala and Huntington, Texas. If you put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you where those places were. It's not peculiar to this family. It's true everywhere. My mother and father chose not to be buried up there. They're buried in West Columbia. Linda's family has a family cemetery in Gonzales, Texas. Her mother and father chose to be buried here. So what happens is this. A generation comes and a generation goes. But what you have happen is the monotony or the sameness of life eventually takes hold. And you've seen it 1,000 times. You've seen it 100,000 times. And so we spend all of our time looking for the novel. I want to buy this. I want to go see this. I want to do this. But the fact of the matter is, the older you get, the more life is defined by a generation comes and a generation goes, but the earth remains the same. I want to pick that up in just a moment. Elena, would you lead us in prayer, please? Verse 8, all things are wearisome. After you have lived on this earth and you've seen 365 sunrises, by the time you're 20 years old, you've seen quite a few sunrises, haven't you? By the time you're 30 years old, you've seen a lot of sunrises. What happens by the time you get to be 60 years old? You take 365 times 60, and you calculate how many times you have seen the sun come up, at least from our perspective, and the sun go down. Anybody ever seen rain in this part of the country? You ever seen a flood? So all the rivers, the Brazos River, the Menard River, the Colorado River, they all feed into the Gulf of Mexico. Is the Gulf of Mexico filled up in your lifetime where it's completely full, no more water can go there? There is a short period of time every once in a while that it fills up, right? You know that when the rivers start backing up this direction. Now the simple fact of the matter is, as he points out this in verse 9, verse 8, he says, man is not able to tell it. You're not able to re-express the fact, but the eye is never satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done will be done. So is there anything new under the sun? Is there anything which one might say, see, it's new. Already it has existed for ages which was before us. There is no remembrance of earlier things and also of latter things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance amongst those who will come later. I want you to look at this for a moment with me in verse 9. So what he says in the latter part of verse 8 is, the eye is never tired of seeing things. The ear is never filled with listening with things. If you love going to concerts or you love musicals, you can't wait for the next one. If you love watching TV or movies and you can't wait till the next one comes out, the eye never gets tired of seeing things. But the fact of the matter is, life is not defined by novel things. Let me tell you why. Linda and I last night went to Rockets game. I went Monday night with Shelby, went last night. I've had season tickets for 14 years. I split them with a friend because even I can't go to 40 basketball games a year. Now, when I was a kid, I was built more for comfort than speed, and so I was not a basketball player, but I liked watching it. And we had a great game, wonderful game. We were excited. Monday night, not so much. Shelby and I griped all the way home about how sorry they were. Now, first 10 years I had these tickets, Linda wouldn't go. She didn't want to go. What, basketball, are you kidding me? I don't want to go. So I had one time a friend of mine who got sick and had to cancel. She went with me. Since that time, if we're going to leave at 6 o'clock, she's in the car at 5. She's dressed, ready to go. Where are we going to go? Watching every single one on TV. And so we can't wait for the next new thing, the next new thing. If you had a travel trailer or a boat or a jet ski or a motorhome or you love to take vacations, you're going to be the same way. You can't wait for the next one. The amazing thing is how long you have that anticipation and you're excited. You can't hardly wait until you get to do it. How long does that event make you happy or satisfy you? How long can you even remember? We had a nice little breakfast, several of us, at our house, and several of us went bowling the other night and had a good time. How long are you going to remember that? How long will it be before that basically is gone from your mind? You travel and you see things. Oh, you can't wait. You've got somebody coming to see you. You're so excited about this person coming to see you. Oh, I can't wait for this person to come. And they come and they leave. And it's gone. It's over. So Solomon talks about, I want you to look at this in verse, even though we're always wanting to see the next thing, we can't wait to go to the next concert, the next picture show that comes out. We can't wait to get the next video game. We can't wait to see our friends. We can't wait to whatever, go to eat at our favorite place. He says in verse 9, that which has been is that which will be. And that which has been done is that which will be done. It's in the past. It's gone. Is there anything, he says, in the latter part of verse 9, so there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see, this is new? It has existed in ages before, which were before us. There's no remembrance of earlier things and also the latter things which occur, for there will be no for them, no remembrance among those who will come later still. But you might look at something and say, this is new. We now have a phone that you can hold in your pocket or your purse that has 10 times, 1,000 times the amount of power of computers when I first started that would take a whole room. This is new. It's not new. Every single thing that went into that computer has been here for ages in the past. But what he's talking about is when it comes to novel things in your life, what you're going to see is your life is not defined by those things. If so, you're going to become very frustrated and very bored because the eyes never tired of seeing and the ears never full of hearing. And so it's always the next one, the next one, the next one. And eventually, you get frustrated. You get bored. You get tired. You get a free trip to Hawaii and you gripe because it rains. Because that's just how it is. There's not anything new. And here's what the world is like. We have babies born. We've had several babies born tied to this family just in the last few months. Oh, we're so excited. We're so excited. For how long? I know one where they put a picture of the baby on Facebook every day. Every day. Right, Joe? 3.5 months every day. This is the cutest child that was ever born, according to their family. I want you to think, what I want you to think about is this. When you start trying to put it all together and you start trying to say, what is life all about? That's the question he asked in verse 3 again. What advantage? When you finish working and you've made all the money you're going to make and you've done all the things and you've seen all of the things, he says it's like trying to grab wind. I want you to look now in verse 14. I have seen. He was an old man when he wrote this. Verse 14, I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. Maybe that's your goal in life. I'm going to solve hunger. I'm going to make certain that nobody ever gets this kind of disease or that kind of disease. A number of years ago, I did a funeral service for a young man, a child of a friend of mine who was killed in a car wreck on graduation night. And he was buried, the boy was buried in De Quincy, Louisiana. De Quincy, DeRidder, Decatur, some of you know where that area was. A good many years ago, that area was devastated by scarlet fever. Devastated. I'd never been there before, but I walked into this cemetery. And what I saw was hundreds of family plots that looked like this. Here's the daddy. Here's the mama. Here's this child, this child, this child, this child, this child, this child, this child. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of grave sites where the entire family was wiped out. Do you know back then with scarlet fever and rheumatic fever, if a family member got it, do you know how they dealt with it? Quarantine them. You know how they quarantined them in that part of the country? They took a rope and they tied it around the outside of the house. Nobody gets out. Nobody gets out alive. And they were trying to stop that. That was pretty devastating to me. What is crooked cannot be straightened. It is how God made the world. It's part of the world. And you can spend your lifetime trying to help that, and that's a novel thing. But the simple fact is, things are crooked in life. You're not going to straighten. Verse 16, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased in wisdom more than all who were in Jerusalem before me, and my mind observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge, and I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized this also was striving after wind. Isn't that amazing? Here's a person, I'm going to read the end of the internet. I'm going to stay in front of the computer until I have reached the end of the internet. You ever known anybody that seemed like they were trying that? So what does Solomon say about wisdom, about trying to acquire wisdom and more schooling and more education and reading more? What did he say about it? It too is like striving after wind. Why? In verse 18, because in much wisdom, what does he say? There's much grief. In much wisdom is much grief. And increased knowledge results in increased pain. I hear people say pretty often, man, he said, we've got more wars and we got more terror attacks than we've ever had in the history of the world. Could be. Or it could be we have about a half a dozen cable channels that run cycle, basically circular news 24 hours a day. Is that possible? How many of you here know what your cholesterol number is? Raise your hand. How many of you knew what the word cholesterol meant 30 years ago? I'm going to tell you, it was not in the English language. So we're scared to death now about something we didn't know what it was 30 years ago. How is that? With increased knowledge comes increased pain. My grandparents that I would go spend summers lived in Lufkin, Texas. This would have been in the 1960s, 1970s. They had one TV station. One TV station. It came on at 6 o'clock, the news, went off at 10. Do you have an idea that you're worried about a lot more things than those people up there were? Now he's coming to a point. Look in verse chapter 2.
Rick.
Yes, sir.
I thought you might have been late enough. We're talking about Bill Gates being the richest man in the world. And I didn't want to take it away from you, but if you lead up there, with all the wealth he had, but we know that he could have anything physically that he wanted. But what did he, I didn't watch all the program, but I saw where they're telling what his foundation has done.
Right.
And it was showing the lies that the foundation, Monetary Foundation, that's become more important to him than when he was younger and enjoying all these things like Solomon did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Solomon's writing these stories to let us know it made of no avail throughout eternity. And we can see where Bill Gates has seen that these earthly pleasures are not going to last. So they started putting their money in heaven.
That's right.
Kids that didn't have anything.
And that really is where Solomon's coming to. And that is God placed inside of each one of us a whole lot deeper desire than the stuff of this earth. That's why he keeps saying, Solomon does, it's vanity. It's like striving after wind. Look in verse chapter 2. I said to myself, so the first thing he wanted was wisdom. I want all the wisdom I can. I want to gather all the wisdom in the world. And he said, it's vanity. In verse 1, chapter 2 and verse 1, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself, and behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it's madness. And of pleasure, what does it accomplish? Well, it was great for short term, like I talked about a little while ago, and then it goes away. And every single one of you have experienced this 1,000 times. Life is not known by the novel things. We want to make it. I want to hear more. I want to see more. I want to do more. When life is over, the man with the most toys wins. That's kind of our philosophy in life. But the fact is, all of us, if you have lived long enough, your life is defined by this, the sameness, not by the novel things. Now look a little bit further in chapter 2 about verse 4. I enlarged, verse 3, I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men. And so now I'm trying alcohol and other kinds of things to stimulate my brain. He said in verse 3, to see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven for these few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. I planted them all kinds of fruit trees. I made a pond of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves. I had homeborn slaves. I also possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. 1 Kings chapter 4, the end of that chapter. You want to know how much Solomon had, and how many cattle had to be killed every day to feed his household? It's pretty phenomenal. In verse 8, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasures of kings and provinces, and provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in wisdom in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eye desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold from my heart any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of my labor, and that was my reward for my labor. Now, I want to just stop for a minute. Talking about great men in our day and time, do you think any of us here, anybody sitting in this room, will ever be able to have more stuff than Solomon? More slaves, more money, more pawns. You know, we build houses and we fill up our houses and we lock them, and then our houses get full. And so we got to add on to our house, and we put more stuff in there. We got to lock it so people don't get our stuff. And then we got to build a garage, and then we got to build a shed, and then we got to have a storage warehouse, and we got to lock it all up so people don't get our stuff. And we just keep getting more and more and more stuff. And what happens? What happens is you can't run fast enough to fulfill what's in your heart. That's what Solomon says. I have taught this book many times. In fact, I think 4 or 5 times I've done gospel meetings, 6 or 7 lessons where I did all of it on the book of Ecclesiastes. And people say it's such a negative book. Well, Solomon didn't want it to be negative. Here's the two things I want to close with this morning. Number one, in verse 10, there's an interesting phrase. The latter part of chapter 2 in verse 10. My heart was pleased because of all of my labor. In verse 11, and this was my reward for all of my labor. My heart was pleased with the labor. Over the course of time, Solomon determined that the work, the labor, the ability to say, I worked these years, I helped people, I did something. So he found value in the work that he did, not in the stuff that came from it, but in the work that he put in. But I want you to look in verse 18, verse 17. In verse 16, he finds out that I'm an old man now, I'm about to die, and guess what? Nobody knows me and nobody cares. In verse 16, for there was no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as the coming days will be forgotten. And how the wise man and the fool alike die. They're born, they live for a period of time, they get old, and they die. And that's how it's happened. It's happened like that since the beginning of time, and it's going to happen like that. All the vitamins, all the exercise equipment, all the lotions and all the potions. Oh, I'm not going to drink Cokes. I'm not going to eat pork. My grandfather, every single morning, my grandmother would make him 4 slices of bacon. And he wanted it just warm enough that you could see through the fat. He died in a tractor accident when he was 78 years old. He was still working. Now, he probably worked a lot harder than us. But if you looked at that today, 4 eggs every morning of his life, 4 pieces of bacon that weren't done. And then somebody else. There used to be a guy who he was the advertising for all the cereals. And he ate nothing but nuts. What was his name? Anybody know his name? Yule Gibbons. Is Yule Gibbons still alive? Oh, he died, didn't he? That's right. Isn't that amazing? Look at verse 18. Verse 17. I hated life, for the work that had been done under the sun was grievous to me. When he went through all of his research and all of the things that should have made people happy. In verse 18, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to a man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. I'm going to tell you, Solomon had a son that became king for a short period of time. Anybody know what his name was? Rehoboam. Rehoboam was a fool. I don't know if he was a fool before he got the kingship and got power, but or the money made him one. Solomon's going to talk about that. But Solomon raised a fool. And verse 20. Therefore I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor that I had labored under the sun. When there is a man who labors with wisdom and knowledge and skill, and he gives his legacy to one who has not labored for them, this too is vanity and great evil. I had a very dear friend, one of my mentors, passed away a few years ago, Brother Oliver Murray. Some of you knew him. His wife's name was Roberta. And Oliver said this, I told my kids I'm spending your inheritance. Don't ask me for a thing, he said. When I die, I want enough money left to bury me. And I'm not leaving y'all nothing. And he wanted me to be sure that I knew that. Now look at verse 22. For what does a man get in his labor when he's striving and labors under the sun? Because all his days are painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. This is vanity. Verse 24, I'm going to sum it up in the next minute. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell him that his labor is good. Does he say it's a bad thing to work and to make money? No, it's not bad at all. Is it bad to go see things? No. Is it bad to collect things? No, it's not bad at all. Here's what he learned from that. Verse 24, there's nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself his labor is good. That I have seen is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can enjoy have enjoyment without him? I want to come back to that. For to a person who is good in his sight, in God's sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he has given the task of gathering and collecting, so that he may give to one who is good in God's sight. This is vanity and striving after the wind. So he summarizes this. Enjoy it. Go out. Look for the novel things. Make money. Build houses. Travel. See the world. Get the best stereo you can. When I first went to work at Dow Chemical, every young person, young man, young woman, goes to work at Dow Chemical. The first thing they bought, all of us, was the biggest stereo we could find. And number two was a new car. You could just count on it. We hire five or six new people. You drive out about a month later, parking lot's got five new paper tags in it. Do that, he says. However, if you have God in the center of your life, and now you're preparing for the best life on this earth, and for eternity, all of this makes sense. I'm not chasing after the novel thing. Now what happens is you put God in the center of your life. Not something you do from time to time. Oh, I go to church. When you put God in the center of your life, every bit of this makes sense. Because now what's happening is you are focusing on 10,000 years, 100,000 years, a million years. You're focusing on multiple generations on this earth. The last verse, I want you to look at it, chapter 12 and verse 13 and 14. Chapter 12. So here's where he ends up. After doing all of this, we're going to spend more time on this in detail on Wednesday night. The conclusion when all has been heard is what? Fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every man. Because God will bring every act into judgment, everything which is hidden, whether good or evil. I talk about this in all different kind of ways. We've experienced it in my family. You have too. When someone gets old, passes from this life and breathes their last breath, if they have lived their life for God and they know God, Isn't it a completely different world than if they didn't? It's totally, totally, totally different. Any comments or questions? I had a lot of material to cover. We're going to spend a lot more time on this, the details of it, on Wednesday night. Any comments? All right, so we will pick up, Lord willing, on Wednesday evening back in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Thank you for listening.